We have our main speaker, Bull C from Atascadero. Welcome.
Bull's an alcoholic. Boy, am I. I'll just start off with, I was born at a really young age. And I'm not much older now, and I know much less now than I did when I was born, because I had natural things to I just knew what to do then. I don't know what to do sometimes now. You know, and you never know when you're going to get triggered here, you know. I don't have to let that run my life today, you know. When I used to get triggered, I used to have anger, and I used to act out on that anger, and that anger would put me in handcuffs, and them handcuffs would put me in the back of a police car, and there's a lot of that in my story, and that's when I would begin to pray. What I call the convict's chapel. Every tough guy with handcuffs in the back seat of a cop car, after the cop puts his hand on your head and helps you in there, you begin to pray to a power greater than ourselves, which is probably the judge, just because really, when I was praying to God, I was really hoping it was going right to the judge, you know? And so, I don't have to do that today. You know, I can take a minute out of my time, go out and get what I know, get close to nature. I'm Native American Chumash in nature and in my heritage. And so I went out and I sat in the trees there for a minute and I did a little prayer, you know. Got close to I asked that tree to give me a little help, you know. So I got that and came inside, you know, and came in here to talk to you guys. So when I got an email from Kristen, and it said, here's the protocol for being here, right? Here's what we do, right? And it said no profanity, right? Now I'm not, what? You know? And so, you know what happens when you tell one of us no, right? It makes us want to do it, right? So here we go. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it took me to Narcotics Anonymous, and Narcotics Anonymous has saved my ass for years and years and years. That's probably the last, after this one, thing you'll hear from me, unless I get carried away. I came to these rooms because you could say God and fuck in the same sentence, and nobody cared. Nobody told me I was going to be condemned, and nobody told me I was going to go to any place other than forward. To step 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And then back to 1 again with another alcoholic or an addict, right? And so, but I can be respectful at the same time, right? And I can come in here and do that. But I'm telling you, I don't wanna, you know? Right? I don't want to. And so I can also say, we don't want to. Because I know most of the feelings and most of the things that go through my head and my life and my heart, if you're an alcoholic like I am, that it goes through your head and your heart and your mind as well. I am not alone here. I don't care how hard I try to be alone here. I am not alone here as long as I use my voice, as long as I stick my hand out, as long as I ask for help or give help when it's asked. And so, when I was little, I was little once. my father used to give me hot toddies when I had a little sniffle or something like that. And if you don't know what a hot toddy is, my dad used bourbon whiskey, lemon juice, sugar, and hot water, right? And he would give me that, and I would drink it, and I would go to sleep. And he could play dominoes all night with his buddies because I wouldn't be bugging him, like, you know. and asking him, what's the one of those dots and stuff mean? And giving all that stuff away and all that, right? So he would give me that because he'd go, well, you get a little cold, you know, here, take the hot toddy. And I would drink the hot toddy. And you know, I was like 6, maybe 7 years old. And man, I was sick all the time. when my his buddies would come over to play dominoes and poker, and I would go, "Dad, I think I need a toddy, Dad." And he'd be like, "Okay, that's a good idea. Give the boy, you know." And I never got to help make them, though. I probably would have skipped the water, probably would have. But I remember that way back then. There's a lot of other things I don't remember, but I do remember stuff like my mom being able to throw a shoe around a corner, you know. I do. I haven't got that ability yet, but I know it's in my genes, right? You know, so I grew up in that kind of a household, man, where we got whoopings. We didn't get spankings, we didn't get slapped on the hand, we got whoopings, you know. And I began to pass that on to my children, and as a result of here, that didn't happen too much. But it did happen, you know. I have a history of drinking and being abusive to females. You know, not just females, but those are the ones that really, really worked on. I had to work on that kind of stuff, you know. Had to get right with that stuff and admit my wrongs. And it wasn't any more right to beat up a guy or to get beat up by a guy. But in our society, it's just not a good thing, right? And so it's just not something we should do. We should never touch each other in a bad way, you know. And I've learned that here. I've got that here. I don't do that stuff anymore. I don't, even when I get in an argument with somebody, it makes me sick today, you know? And when I use bad words and all that stuff towards them, which I can't use here, right? and there's a lot of things around here reminding me of, I probably can't do that here, right? Right? We don't want the electricity to go off or anything like that. And I look at these things right here, and I'm like, wow, man, what? It's kind of enticing. I don't know, you know. I mean, I know they put something in there that I wouldn't just be able to take a sip of. You know? I just wouldn't, you know. And and then what, Bo, thank you for your message. That was beautiful. You said you were so eloquent and so to the point, really, in such a small amount of time. You know, I would like to hear you go on with your story, you know, and so that means I'll get to know you sometime, you know. And it's obvious that you've been here and you've done some work. And what you said about you sucky, 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 suck, you know, that one, the fast one, right? If I was doing that and I walked in here, right, and I saw these things hanging down from here, I would be gone, be gone, be gone. I couldn't do it, man. You're like, I know they're listening to me, but man, they're really listening to me, you know. And anybody looking suspicious, any van that looked funny, anything like that was subject to me confronting them in a bad way. You know, and I got a couple buddies here that would be with me, confronting me. Doogie? Yeah. You know, and I'm really fortunate to have, you know, gotten involved with a nonprofit organization that I actually helped to start. And it's called Griffin. And there's a couple of people from that place that are here today, you know. And I got the honor of attending a wedding today for a man that was at Griffin. And it just blows my mind that this guy came from where he came from, hiding behind things and on high speed chases with the police and kidnappings and all kinds of junk. I'm telling on him now, huh? And so and now he's working as not just an apprentice, but he's a journeyman, you know, an electrician with a crew, doing well. Got married today to a woman that has a job as well, that was doing the same shit he was doing, right? Back a while ago, you know? And to watch these guys get married in a beautiful ceremony with about 250 people there, with our people there cooking and serving and taking care of it, and everybody smiling and saying hello and meeting each other and being calm, no fights. There was nobody following nobody down the road going, "Get in the car, God dang it." Right? "Get in the car, I ain't getting in the car, get in the car." No. Yeah. And there was nobody else running down there going, leave her alone, God. Stop that, right? No fights, no brawls. None of that junk happened today, man. I don't think. I mean, Van was there, but he still didn't do it, bro. So I got to see people like, you know, our people there that I'm lucky that I got clean when I got clean. I got clean May 26, 1998. And I haven't found the reason. My sponsor says, if you can find a reason to get loaded, then I'll buy it and go with you. And I brought him a few things, man, you know, just to see, you know. You know? Just to see. And he does this, he did this thing with me, man. He brought this thing out called a dictionary, you know. If you guys, any of you guys started doing step work and stuff and started reading the big book, you know, that we really need a dictionary because there's stuff in there that, like, I don't get it, right? I don't know about the rapacious creditor and those. I got to, like, look, what is that, right? So we get a dictionary. So he said, if you can find me a reason, according to the dictionary, I'll buy it and I'll go with you, as opposed to an excuse. So I had to read, what's an excuse? What's a reason? Everything I brought him so far has been an excuse, not a reason. And now I've been here long enough and done enough work and stuff that even if he did, if I did bring him something that he figured was a reason, I wouldn't go with him. You know? I wouldn't go with him. I'd be like, hey, bro, come here, wait a minute. Let's get this book out of here and look again. Right? And or I'd let him go, and then I'd go, okay, now I get to sponsor you, you know? And and you never know around here when something like that's going to happen. And my sponsor's gone through some hard times along with me, and I've gone through some with him, and he's told me recently in the last couple of years that sometimes it's hard to tell who's who. And I took that as a compliment, you know? That every once in a while we need each other. He's been my sponsor for about 16 years, 17 years, probably longer. I just didn't really ask him before that. But there's been a lot of men in my life that have mean a lot to me and it helped me do this stuff. You know, I'm not specific to that one guy when I need. I can't wait to get a hold of him. Sometimes I get talked to another man, and the women have been real beneficial in my program as well, especially. When it comes to dealing with other women, you know, I have to ask a female, what do you think about this? And they'll be like, well, I think that's not a good idea. You know? Or maybe you want to say it like this, or, you know, or maybe just, no. I've heard that one a few times. No, you know, so I have a guardian angel, which is part of my higher power's crew. You know, we all have a higher power and we have a crew. They have a crew. You know, I call mine the fire keeper. You know, my guardian angel keeps the fire for the sweat lodge for the creator. And but that guardian angel watches me all the time. And every once in a while, the guardian angel is like this. This guy, man. Oh, holy moly. And I know when that happens, I can feel it, I know when that happens, we know when we're not doing what we're supposed to do. We know when we're looking where we're not supposed to be looking. We know when we're saying stuff we're not supposed to be saying. We know when we're gossiping, we know those things. The difference is when we get here, is we're able to take care of that right away. You know, there's no one perfect here. No one perfect in this program. No one works a perfect program except for if you didn't drink today, that was perfect. If you didn't do whatever it is that made your higher power talk really fast, right? Or really slow, mine just kind of nodded out. I'd have to go, you know what I mean? I would have to go, hey, talking to you. Oh, what? With a burnt cigarette, holding, you know, that whole, that's mine right there, man. That was my higher power, right? And so, and then my other one was the California Department of Corrections. I spent a lot of time locked up as a result of my drinking and using. as a result of my violence, as a result of my being resistant. Just like when, if I read something and it said, don't, it makes me want to do. You know, but this is the kind of people we are, right? We walk by, there's a hole in the wall and it says, don't stick your hand in here. Right? So what do? The first thing we do is this. There's no one looking, right? So we stick our hand in there, someone bites it, we go, ow! And then we stick our head in there to see what bit it. Right? Yeah, that's us. Right? I'll fix you, man. You just bit me. Yeah, we're crazy. Don't walk on the grass, right? We think so somehow we can get a bicycle right on the other side. We didn't walk on the grass, you know? Right? I didn't walk on the grass. What are you talking about? I rode a bicycle, you know? Makes total sense, right? Yeah. So my point is that I was able to use that kind of language in my own head to justify what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it, because I didn't do exactly what it said. I played mind games and word games, right? And I stayed on that fence all the time, right? And you gotta choose here which side of the fence you're gonna be on. And once you choose that, I believe that's right at the third step. When we do that third step, when we get on our knees, no matter where we're at, in the playground, in the church, in the church in your heart, whatever it is, in front of a bunch of people, I like to get my guys right in the park. Right there. Yeah, Burger King, whatever. Let's pray right now, man. You know, you're ready right now? Yeah, I'm ready right now. Okay, let's go. Right now? They're like, no? Yeah, right now. Because right now is only right now. It's not in 10 minutes, it's not in 15 minutes, it's not 20 minutes, not tomorrow, it's right now. And so when any of my guys or whatever tell me, yeah, I'm ready to do it, let's do it right now. We hit our knees and we do that prayer, we do the third step prayer. Mine's a little bit different than the AA third step prayer. It's basically take my will, take my life, guide me, show me how to live, man. And once you do that from here, then your life is no longer your business. So you move on to that fourth step with courage and with strength. And then you start to get some wisdom. You start writing that stuff down. The stuff that you did, not the stuff that they did, stuff that you did, right? We all know what they did, huh? They didn't do nothing, really. I thought they did, but they didn't. And who are they anyway? You know? Yeah. Never mind, there aren't any days here. So, I got a little paranoid back in the days, man. A little paranoid, you know. To the point where I carried a gun with no bullets. You know? I was afraid, but I was also afraid of what I might do if I had bullets, too. Right? Yeah. Besides that, you don't know that, right? You don't know I don't have bullets. So, I was a tough guy, yeah. I found out that I found out about tough guys here, you know. I thought tough guys went to prison. I thought tough guys went to the hole in prison. I thought tough guys did what the homeboys told them to do. I thought tough guys did their time, came out here, handled their business, didn't go by the rules, did what they needed to do, whatever, and went back inside. You know, and did their time, wrote it out to the end, came out here and did it again, right? Tough guys were guys that could fight well, guys that could talk, could say all that stuff in here and not care, right? And all that stuff, and tough guys did what they wanted to do. And so I found out here that tough guys go to recitals with four-year-old little girls, right? And show up. Tough guys get a paycheck from a guy they don't really like. Oh, there's some tough guys out there right now, huh? Right? Yeah. And some tough women too, probably, huh? Yeah. And so, you know what I mean? Like, we tolerate things. That's what tough guys do. We take care of our families. We take care of ourselves. Tough guys hit their knees when they're asked to hit their knees. Tough guys pray every day. Right? Tough guys suit up and show up when they don't want to suit up and show up. Tough guys stick their nose to another tough guy's nose and tell them, you're not going back to prison. Right? I'm not talking about myself, but I've done that a few times, more than once. And some of them have not gone back, and some of them have. I'm not saying I'm a tough guy, but my skin's a lot thicker than it used to be. I'm capable of a lot of things I never was capable of before. And I'm capable of loving another human being to the point of making you mad. And telling you the truth, if you ask. I used to think I had to tell you the truth, even if you didn't ask. No? Yeah, come here, Holmes, let me tell you what, you know, let me tell you what you need to do, man, you know? But I've been hanging around with a bunch of, some people ask me, what have you been doing? I'm like, convicts and dope fiends, man, that's my deal, convicts and dope fiends. I really have dedicated my life to helping my brothers and sisters to come from what I call the Iron House, from prison, because I get it. I kind of wish I didn't get it, but I get it. And this works for those people, us people, right? Some of you haven't gone there yet, but you could. You know, somebody told me yet stands for you're eligible too, right? Yeah. So it doesn't mean, you know, if you're 75 years old and you've been here for 25 years, you can still go to prison. Right? You can still say something stupid to the cop when he pulls you over for going 65 out of 40, you know, and end up in jail. We still can do that. It's not necessary for us to have to drink to get in trouble. Drinking is just part of this deal, right? Drinking and using is just part of this deal. It brings out this disease, this dis-ease that we have that's not comfortable to the public or ourselves. So, anyways. In 1982, which was a while back, I had been arrested four times in 1 week, or three, or four, and I forgot. It's been so long and I forgot. A bunch of times in 1 week for drinking and drugging in my hometown in Yuba City, California. That's where I was born and raised. And I was really raised here. I was really raised in 12-step program, in Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous. I was raised here. I grew up here. I'm still growing up here, right? I'm kind of wishing I had started earlier so I could finish growing up, you know? But I don't like growing up either. Do you? I don't like this growing up stuff sometimes, you know? But I do. I'm a great grandfather. So anyways, 1982, I got arrested four times. Went to jail. Got out of jail that morning. I lived on a ranch. It's a lot of that up there where I come from. Lived on a ranch, and the house that I lived in was part of my job. The car, the truck that I drove was part of my job. The bills were part of my job, right? Everything was paid for. I made like $1,000 a month in the 1982, which I hated it. I was like, this sucks, man. You know, you suck, you suck, you suck was going on then too, right? Because I was doing all that stuff to have those guys talking to me all the time. And I think at one point I had one on this shoulder saying, you suck, and one on this shoulder saying, yeah, you do. You know? Yeah. You know, and something else said, act out. You know, act out, you know? And they'll forget about that part. So I did a lot of that. I didn't know what to do. They let me out of jail, and I went home. Somehow I got home. And back then, I had a liquor cabinet, and the liquor cabinet was full of dark liquor and light liquor, and plenty of good hard booze. And I had another thing, you know, with some other stuff you could smoke, and my body was always full of something. And I was looking at that stuff, and I'm like, man, I can't. I got to do something, and I was like this. Now I know it was like that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. I had hit that spot that we all hit before we get here, and there was this book right there. It's called a phone book. See, youngsters probably don't know about that, right? But then there's two colors, right? yellow, the yellow part, and a white part, right? And the yellow part was like stuff that could help you do things, right? Businesses, stuff like that. I opened up the yellow part to A, and the first letter is A, the second letter is A, right? And so is the third letter. And so I found the Alano Club in Marysville, California. I called them, said something about you got problems or something like that. I'm like, boy, I got problems, right? And I called them, and they told me, well, come to a meeting. And I said, I can't come to a meeting. I don't even know where my truck's at. I'm I don't know. Do you mind if we come there? I said, I don't mind. Come on down, man. I lived in this place called District 10. I know what it's about. It's about water back then, but District 10 sounds kind of strong, huh? Right? So anyways, they came out to District 10 to my little house on 150 acres. You know, I had it made. It was just, I couldn't stand that place, man. I had, they came to my house, three guys. They came in the house, and they said, looks like there's some kids around here. Where are the kids at, man? And I'm like, oh, they're gone. My wife took them. She left. And they're like, your wife left? And I'm like, yeah, she left. And they started laughing. They were like, ha, his wife left, man. And I'm like, that's not very funny. That's not very funny, you know what I mean? And they said, well, where's your car? And I'm like, I don't know where my car is. He doesn't know where his truck's at either, man. You know? Like, and I'm like, man, that's not funny either. Where were you at last night? I was in jail. He was in jail. Fourth time. All right, good job, dude. Right? And they were like, and I was like, this is not freaking funny, you guys, you know? And they said, well, let's go to a meeting, man. And I go, I don't have a car. Go to a meeting. And they're like, well, we'll take you. Let us take you. And then we'll figure out about your truck and stuff, man, okay? And I'm like, okay. So, you know, they took me to a meeting at the Alano Club in Marysville. We got done with the meeting. I walked into the meeting, and there was there were two layers of air there. There was one with smoke and one without smoke, right? And that was a smoking, non-smoking, right? If you wanted the non-smoking, you need to sit in a real low chair, right? So, and I sat in this old recliner that probably smelled worse than my dog, and it was really comfortable, and it was in the back out of the way, and I sat there, and I listened to what they said, and here's what they said. Wah, 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 wah. AA, right? Wah, 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 sponsor. Wah, 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 wah. You know what I mean? Like, keeps coming back. Okay, whatever. So they told me, this one guy came to me, John K. I never got to tell John thank you, but John K. came to me, and he was like me. He was kind of a convict kind of a guy. He had tattoos everywhere. He walked kind of like this, you know, and he comes up and he says, hey, Holmes, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I'm like, oh, yeah, cool, all right. And he said, because I played baseball and stuff, right? Sponsors give you stuff, man, you know, right? I'm like, right on, man, you can buy me a truck, you know? Because that's how fast our brains work, right? In 13 seconds, we can get married, get divorced, have kids and everything in 13 seconds, right? Right? And then be bummed out all the same 13 seconds. So that's what I did with this guy, you know? And he said, okay, here's what I want you to do. And he said, you see, you're willing to do some stuff. And I said, I'm willing to do some stuff. So he said, okay, well, we're going to figure out where your truck is first. And back then, they gave us booking sheets. They'd book you into the jail, and they'd give you a booking sheet. And back then, before all these other privacy laws and all that other stuff, they put where you got arrested at, right, on the booking sheet. Simple stuff. But I was so messed up, I couldn't do it. I couldn't think of that simple thing. He took it, opened it up, and he said, is that the address right there? Look at this address. And I looked at the address, and I go, yeah, that's where I was arrested. And he said, the truck's probably there, huh? I don't know. Took me there. There was the truck, right? And all of a sudden, I remembered. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Right? And then I remembered. Oh, I'm not supposed to be here anyways. I got to get out of here. I got in the truck. And he said, I want you to go to 90 meetings in 90 days and don't drink in between. And I said, okay, cool. I can do that. So I did. I went home. Like the second day I was there, he said, okay, well, you need to tell your boss what happened. And I was like, what? He gives you a house, a truck, a paycheck, and you got this thing going on here. You're probably telling him you don't feel good or something so you can get here to the meeting. Tell him the truth. So I said, okay. So I did. He said, I'm going to go with you. And I said, no, there's no need for that. And so I went and I told my boss the truth. And he said, well, I guess if you have a little drinking problem, that's okay. You can leave and go to those meetings and it's cool. Drive your own truck. and just use ours for work, okay? And I'm like, okay. And so he was real understanding, just like that, right? And I didn't know at the time that he had a brother that was probably one of us. And I mean, he started having me be honest about things, right? And I didn't know. So anyways, he said don't drink in between, but I used to smoke. And it wasn't cigarettes, you know? And so I used to smoke that stuff on the way there in my truck. You know, I mean, trucks back then didn't have king extra cabs and all that. It was just a pickup truck, right? And I would get out, walk in there, and they would give me a hug and tell me, hey, welcome, man. Thanks. Sit down, have a seat. And I mean, like, we're not a glum lot. We know what's going on. I mean, you guys know when someone's smoking weed, you know? I just had somebody the other day, did you smell weed right now? I'm like, yeah, I did. Doesn't matter, we're here, right? So they never said anything until 88 days, right? Sneaky, right? This is a sneaky place, man. Yeah. I want to not trust you guys, but I know I can, you know, now. And then he said, hey, bro, check this out. There's this other place called Narcotics Anonymous. You talk a lot about those things. And so I think you should go to a meeting there. And I said, okay. And he asked me, do you know what NA stands for? And I said, yeah, you just said Narcotics Anonymous. He goes, no, for dudes like me and you, it means nothing, asshole. Oh, there I go again. Guys like me and you can't use anything. We need to be totally abstinent unless the doctor prescribes it. I didn't hear that until 20 years later, you know. But he took me to an NA meeting. I got 90 days. I got better. My wife came back. I didn't lose my job. Everything's good, right? 20 years later, 20-something years later, when I came back here, I knew where to go. I came to AA, asked where NA was. They showed me where NA was. And I got involved with that program, and then I've been involved with that program and this one ever since then. This is the mothership, I believe that. If it wasn't for this, there would be no that, you know? And I see after working a program in NA, I had to do that in order for my eyes and my ears to see and hear the things that came from here. I had to do that first. And I did that and read that book a whole lot, still read that book a whole lot, and now I read this book a lot too. I can see the catchphrases to where they came from in the basic text, you know, where they came from in the big book. I can see those catchphrases now. I could not see them before. I can see exactly how this program inspired that program for guys like me, right? That had a little, I liked a little bit more. I kind of liked that really fast guy, right? And because it let me drink a lot more, I thought. It let me drink a lot more. It actually helped me go to prison faster, I think. Right? Because I did everything really fast. And then I got clean for, I was in a place called CRC, and not the one the cottage has. Another one, Department of Corrections, and I was there with some other guys that are in this room for about a year, and I kind of stayed clean in there, but not, you know, and I came home, I got involved in a program with a lady named Jan Stone. I'm sure you guys are in South County, everybody knows Jan, man. My home girl, man, you know what I mean, and Jan and I did stuff that we can't talk about for sure, right, and Bob. And and I got clean going to that meeting every day, that Road Runners meeting, and I still to this day call that my home group, man. That's where I got my footing at first, me and some other guys, Patrick and some other guys, started going to that meeting in the morning, and then we go, first we go to the 7:30, then we go to Roadrunners, then we go to the noon meeting, then we go to the 5:30, then we go to the 8 o'clock, right, every day. And I got 9 months. You know, I got up to 9 months. I got 9 months clean, man. And then something happened. I was telling Lori today that this guy, man, he moved here from down in L.A. He came here. He had twin kids. His wife was messed up. She wasn't around. He was raising these two kids, and he was selling drugs. And I thought, you know, I got to help this guy. Somehow. Well, I got 9 months, man. So I said, I'll tell you what, man, you go do what you got to go do, and I'll watch the kids. You know, and I'm probably not a very good babysitter anyways, but I'm watching these kids, right? And he was going out doing what he was doing, but there was stuff there. And so anyway, bottom line is I ended up getting loaded, and I didn't know what to do. You know, it was and I remember the main thing that was really bothering me a lot while I was there was there was a bottle of Jack Daniels, and it was in the freezer, and it was there forever, man. I used to walk by there and they'd go, hey, check me out, and I'd look in there, what are you doing in there? And I'd close it, right? and that day when I smoked some of that stuff, right, and I did some of the other stuff, I walked in there, man. I opened it up and said, hello, sup, Jack? Blam, 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 see you later. That's where you're supposed to go anyway. And then I proceeded to be on a run for about 2 or 3 weeks. And I had, they say a belly full of this, you know, a belly full of booze and a head full of this doesn't work. And so I knew I had to do something, but I didn't know what to do. And the courage of this place gave me I got the courage to go tell my parole officer what I was doing and that I couldn't stop. And she said, you need to give me a clean test by Monday. Come back on Monday. And I, you know, instead of saying, no, I can't, I said, okay, you know. And so I went and came back on Monday. I don't even know why I came back on Monday. Well, I do now. I came back on Monday. And I told her, I'm not clean. You got to send me to prison. She said, prison doesn't work. You need to go to a program. So in 1990, I had tested positive for HIV. And I said, well, I want to go to a place. I was trying to blame everything else on any other disease except for this one. I said, I want to go to a place for people like me. And so we found a place for people like me that had drug problems. It was in Redwood City, called Redwood Center. I went to Redwood Center. I got clean there. I've been clean ever since. But on the way there, I did what all good drug addicts do and good alcoholics do, right? I got loaded on the way there before I left. And we got to Salinas and the train stopped, right? And I got out to have a cigarette. The train stopped. I turned around and the train had left. A whole train. Gone. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not supposed to go. It's God, right? Right? It's God. And so I called Marie, and she wasn't my wife yet. I called Marie. She said, nope, keep going. I called Jody, my homegirl. She said, nope, keep going. I called somebody else. Nope, keep going. I go, you guys ain't getting this, man. It's God, right? So this guy, homeless guy, was walking around looking in trash cans and stuff, man. And I said, hey, homeboy, come here. You know, where's the, because they said the train's not coming back till tomorrow, and it's going that way, not that way, right? And so I said, where's Greyhound? And they showed me where Greyhound was. And I told that dude, take me to Greyhound. And I said, let me buy you something, man. You know where to get any drugs? And he said, yeah. And I gave him some money. He went and got the drugs. He came back. He wouldn't share them with me until he got to this certain spot, right? He got to this point where he was like, okay, man, here. And I realized, this is God. If I take that pipe right now, I'm going to be right here with you for who knows how long. And I said, no thanks, bro. I got to get on the bus. And I turned around, and he was gone, right, like a spirit. That was God. That was God in my life there, right? At 2 years clean, 2.5 years clean, My son decided to get clean up in Northern California. He went to a 6-month program. He got 30 days under his belt and decided, I'm good. He went home. He decided when he was at home, I can't do this. My homeboys are all doing this stuff. I can't do it. Pops, he called me. Dad, come and get me. I don't know what to do. I can't stay clean here. I can't do it. I'm going to be able to do it. I brought him here. I took him to a meeting in the morning time that day on January 20th, 2001. And we hiked up to the top of Bishop's Peak, and he fell from that top, that rock up there, and he died that day. And right away, I tried to own it. I tried to say, oh, man, he didn't want to go. And I said, no, this is what we do, man. I'm clean and sober. We go have fun. We go look at things. Wait till we get up there, man. It's beautiful up there, man. We live in this killer spot. And we still live in the same killer place. My point is that this is another time that God was in my life, right? I had been around for a while. The men in the program, the man that was cooking the food today at the wedding, and some other, and another man named Patrick, was there before I even got to see my son's body. They were there, and they were there for me, right? They took me home. They looked at him before I got to look at him. They said, let us take a look at him first before you get to see him, if it's okay with you. I met a man named Jerry Linthal. He ended up being a supervisor here. He was an officer. I had been in the back of his cars playing a few times before that. We became good friends. Me, friends with a cop. Right, we became good friends. He helped me with our organization a whole lot. He helped me start a needle exchange program in this county. He helped me go to the health commission. He helped me go to a lot of places, get doctors, get pharmacists and other people to help out. I started becoming a part of our community through service. And those guys took me home that night. They handed me a book and they said, we're going to have a meeting. And they wouldn't leave me alone. And so I got to carry the message that no matter what, we don't drink, we don't get loaded, even when your child dies. And then I got to be my son's father for one of the first times in his life, in my life. I got to go to the morgue and decide what he was going to wear. I got to help clean him up. I got to call his mother. I got to take his brother to see him for the first time in the morgue. I got to be his father. That's not the natural order of things, but that's the courage and strength I got from here. Let's see. That was in January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. 8 months later, I went through another thing. It was not really traumatic, but it was another thing in my life that was that what I would have drank at. I got married. I got married, right? And those same guys were there. Those same guys were there. Jerry was there. I had a big wedding, just like Berkeley did today. Beautiful big wedding. I'm not married with that woman anymore, but we're good friends. We were married for 16 years. We raised two children. Both of those kids are graduates from Cal Poly. One's going to be a doctor in just a few months. How does that happen? We continued because I've been in the program all this time. I learned how to be a parent and co-parent. I learned how to love my kids no matter what, despite whatever mom and I got going on. I learned how to be a dad. Right? I learned how to support my kids. And lo and behold, guess what happens? My kids support me. They call me up in the middle of the night sometimes and they're like, Dad, what's going on? I'm, what do you mean, what's going on? It doesn't feel right. Something's going on with you. And I'm like, wow. And usually they're right. I took my kids to sweat lodges. I taught them how to do our native ways. And my son is one of the best fire keepers I've ever had. He's serious about it. One time he was trying to help me light a fire, and I told him, hey, man, cut it out. Who's lighting this fire? I got this. And he's like, okay. 6 months later, I'm trying to help him light a fire, and he tells me, he's 16. Who's lighting this fire, man? I said, you are. He goes, okay. know? I've learned to trust my children's, my children. I've learned to trust you guys. I've learned to be a good man here. And when I'm not a good man, I can turn that around. I can use that as a learning thing, you know? I have a lot of friends here. I've done a lot of things. I've been involved in H&I ever since I was, before I was had enough clean time to be involved in H&I. I take a panel inside of ASH for the other program every other Tuesday. And we, those guys have been to jail just like I have in prison. We come out the first night we came out, and there we are, tattoos and all, right, standing in the lobby, crying and hugging each other. Because we're grateful to be able to go in there and listen to these guys, you know. And I found out, you know, that I did it years ago, and we couldn't go in for a long time. And I'm sitting there looking at these guys, and their shirts buttoned like this, and you know, and one guy's got his hat on all weird, and the other guy's hair's not combed at all, and they're looking like crazy people, because that's what I mean. They're crazy people, right? Well, it turns out the crazy one's me, right? But and then when they get to share, the language of the heart comes out of those men inside that institution. It gives me hope. Someone's carrying a message to them, and they're carrying a message to us. How good does it get? It doesn't get any better than that, man. You know what I mean? Yeah, money, property, prestige, you know. I got a couple of Harleys. I've had a few Harleys over the years. Every time I get one exactly like I like it, somebody comes along and says, hey, I'll give you a lot of money for that. And I'm like, okay. And then I go get another one, you know. I live by myself now, and I've been able to work on that, being by myself stuff. I've had relationships with a couple of women over the last few years, and they are all still good. We're not on the outs, like talking bad like we used to do. You know how it used to be, right? It wasn't just get in the car, you know. Get away from me, stay away from me, don't ever come around me, she's blah, 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 blah. All that stuff, and it's just don't do that. There's no need for any of that. We're in program, you know, and so we do program things here, right? We treat each other well. We say nice things about each other, even if we don't totally believe it, right? You know, and because then that gives hope, right? We pray for each other for longer than just 2 weeks sometimes. You know, every day, you know, that person has everything that they need and want, and that they're taken care of, that they're a good person, that they're able to carry this message on to someone else. And if that's not a miracle, I don't know what it is, you know. I can't go anywhere without running into a convict that wants to get clean. I don't care where. You could drop me out of an airplane on Mount Kilimanjaro, probably. There'd be some guy like, hey, I was waiting for you, right? And so my point is I have purpose. I know what my purpose is. I serve it every day, like it or not, and things come out exactly like they're supposed to. I'm retired basically on disability. My bills are three times more than what I get, and every month I have money. You know, that's part of this. I don't worry about it. I don't trip out on it. You know what I mean? And when men ask me to help them out, I help them out with whatever I was taught. I don't make stuff up, you know. And in the morning, I get to do a community sweat lodge for our community. And because my uncle can't do it any longer, and I was told you need to do this, exactly what we do here, pass it on. So if you think you're new here and you don't have anything to give to somebody, well, if you've been here for 3 days and someone walks in with 1 day, you have something to give to them. You are an elder. So with that, I'll say thank you, and I really appreciate you guys having me here.
I think we should give Bull another round of applause.